We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful New York City, the one, the only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm outstanding, Ty. I wouldn't go as far as saying reinvigorated, but today is not only National Signing Day, maybe the late signing day. I don't think we should be calling the first one the early one. Maybe that's just signing day and today's straggler signing day. But I feel pretty great. I mean, there's a lot in the news to discuss. There's a lot of big picture recruiting stuff to discuss, how that relates to maybe some new hires, maybe what programs are looking like for spring, summer, fall, etc. I don't know. I'm feeling a jolt. How about you?
I am feeling a little bit of a jolt as well, to be perfectly honest with you. As you know, if you've been listening to the Solid Verbal for any period of time, we're going to be with you all off season long. Just because there aren't games doesn't mean there's not going to be a podcast. As you said, there is a lot to discuss today. We're going to talk through a bunch of signing day storylines and some other storylines that have popped up seemingly out of nowhere here in and around the world of college football. Don't forget, though, if you do like the show, if you are interested in college football content, as we are year-round, go on out to our website at solidverbal.com. It's free. It's easy. It's quick to subscribe to the show so that you get all of our content automatically downloaded. You can go on out and find the Solid Verbal pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts. So it's nice and easy for you. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. If you feel ever so inclined, go on out and leave us a review or a star rating, all that stuff helps. And finally, if you really are a super verballer, sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah.
It is on our website. And the main purpose for that newsletter is to give our subscribers as early as we can, alerts on when we're going to be doing live shows and where, which, by the way, we have started planning out far, far earlier than we did last year. So we will have announcements sooner this season.
Can I throw a strong verballer ephes real quick? Because
please.
You say if you're a strong verballer, subscribe to the newsletter. All of that is true. I'm going to say if you want to be the strongest verballer, go to your local mall, find an Apple or a Windows store, and subscribe all of those computers to the Solid Verbal.
Good call.
Do that.
Good call.
I think the algorithm loves that.
Yeah. It may also be illegal, but who's keeping track anymore, right? Daniel.
Ignorance.
We do have some breaking news.
Boop, 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 boop.
How about this news yesterday?
Yeah.
About the Michigan State coaching situation. Mark D'Antonio stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a bit of a development. Somebody alerted us out there on the Twitter sphere that we had mentioned this maybe in the preseason, that it could end this way. I don't think we saw it ending quite this way, certainly not at this juncture in early February, which is not at all the template. But now Michigan State very quickly trying to hunt down a new head football coach. I saw some names mentioned. Most of them I thought were very bad ideas. And now here we are where they're left having to pick up the pieces and figure out their next move.
What you have one specific name. I think Pat Shurmur, formerly of the New York Giants, is the bad idea. Because the other names I saw have been recently pretty successful. And Matt Campbell, Pat Narduzzi, Luke Fickell.
I think Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell would be terrific. I don't think either of them want the job, if I saw correctly.
Matt Campbell allegedly was approached and was not interested. Luke Fickell, it's less clear. It may take a lot of cash to get Luke Fickell, but he's got a good situation. Michigan State's it's at the same time a good job with the absolute right dude with the right timing, as I think Mark D'Antonio was good enough to take advantage of, especially in that 2013, 14, 15 zone. But also, that's a tough division with Penn State, as talented as they are. Obviously, Michigan and Ohio State are going to be incredibly tough outs moving forward. That's a tough ask. Still a good job. But
yeah,
interesting timing. I mean, there's never really great timing. And, you know, there's always speculation that sometimes coaches do this so that they have to give the interim tag to their chosen coordinator or favorite assistant. In this case, I think it's the defensive coordinator, Tressel, for Michigan State. He's the interim as of now, and we'll see what happens moving forward. He collected a $4.3 million retention bonus based on a contract he signed a while ago. He collected that bonus January 15th, I want to say. Can't blame him for waiting to take that bonus. It's never going to look the best, but nothing ever really does when you step down. And there's some smoke around this ongoing situation, a legal situation with a former staffer, Curtis Blackwell, at Michigan State. And D'Antonio and his outgoing presser said it has nothing to do with, you know, potential NCAA type accusations. Who knows? But that's D'Antonio's word. And so we'll see. Potentially a very good job. Michigan State reached very high heights, even low heights, in the playoff appearance they made against Alabama. But an interesting job nonetheless, because that is a division that plays a lot of huge games.
I don't like the Narduzzi move. I know he was a bit of a cult hero there because of his defenses, but I haven't seen anything at Pitt that leads me to believe that Michigan State would get anything other than what they just had. And I think they do need to take a step in a different direction, because the offense has been stagnant and Narduzzi doesn't inspire me in that respect. The Pat Shurmur one is the one that, as a recently aggrieved New York Giants fan,
right,
does not make any sense to me. I know there's a bit of a tie there, and maybe Pat Shurmur has played at the highest, most elite levels of the National Football League. But dude, if you can't get the ball to Saquon Barkley, that does not inspire me either. So I hope for their sake they go in a different direction, because neither one of those guys to me stirs it. It just doesn't get it going.
I might be a little inspired by Jim McElwain and the turnaround job he did in year one. Right there, same state.
He's familiar with the area.
Yeah.
I could deal with that.
Michigan the year before, Central Michigan now.
I mean, the two that stuck in my craw were Narduzzi and, to a much greater degree, Pat Shurmur. But
anybody named Pat,
you could make a case for McElwain.
Yeah, you have an anti-Pat bias right now.
I do. I do.
The other somewhat large bit of coaching news. I don't know how much we just did. We discuss this last week, Bo Pelini to LSU.
Maybe in passing.
So he joins the LSU coaching staff. There hasn't been too much in the way of coaching carousel stuff. I saw Joe Moorhead was introduced into the media for the first time today as Oregon's new offensive coordinator. I'm pretty excited about that, Ty. I don't know if we've had the chance to discuss that, because I talked coaching carousel stuff with Andy Staples a couple weeks ago.
I think the last time we broached the subject, it was still kind of an outside possibility, but maybe he was playing footsies a bit with Oregon as potentially his next stop. Are you excited about the move?
Absolutely. 100% absolutely excited. It's a much needed boost of creativity to me, seeing what he was able to do as an offensive coordinator at Penn State. And I understand some of the issues at Mississippi State. I don't know if it was necessarily an offensive creativity issue, in as much as it was quarterbacks didn't seem great / very green, and there seemed to be some interpersonal locker room issues there at the end. The defense certainly took a huge step back, especially against the pass. And maybe we'll get into that some more as we talk about signing day. But I am very excited by that. And you have formerly Tommy, then Tom, back to Tommy, now me, Thomas Reese,
right.
calling the offense at Notre Dame.
Well, we almost did an emerger pod to talk about the Tom to Tommy reconversion, which I'm very excited about. And we will clearly get a lot of mileage out of whether we stick with Tommy or decide to go very, very formal with the Thomas. I don't know if we've settled on that internally yet.
Did you see who ASU now will have calling, or at least co-calling, their defense?
I did catch wind of Marvin Lewis, Dan.
Yes. Syracuse hires away Tony White, running the 3-3-5 for ASU. And it's Marvin Lewis, Antonio Pierce, co-defensive coordinators for Arizona State. And I know we're going to talk some more ASU later, but man, Herm Edwards, Marvin Lewis. There it is.
There it is.
Tempe, Arizona.
Can't make this stuff up. All right.
That's good. I like it. I like it. Big names, recognizable faces.
We can get into some other tidbits here as we go through.
Yeah.
And talk about what's going on signing day, Dan.
Dan and Ty gear up for National Signing Day 2020.
Signing day, yeah. All teams right. are out and about. They're trying to construct.
Hence what you're hearing underneath, Ty.
Yes, yeah. Trying to construct their next rendition.
Mm-hmm.
We have, as per usual, tried to put a little bit of a creative spin on this. So it'd be very easy and not that novel to go through the top 10 classes, the top 25 classes, and talk about some of the highlights, the lowlights, surprises, late gainers, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're trying to look at it from a little bit more of a holistic approach. Now, we already did an interview back in December. You did an interview with our friend Brandon Huffman.
Yes.
In which you guys talked specifically about some of the tactics, some of the strategies, some of the names to watch now as we move forward. But recently, as you know, if you follow college football, they changed up the timing. This signing day, the one that we're accustomed to making a big deal about in February, as of like 2 or 3 years ago, is no longer quite what it used to be. This is kind of like the second signing day period. Where we're at now is most of the big names have signed. There are a couple that we're going to talk about here that have certainly influenced rankings, and congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs on getting that number one spot this year. But it just has taken on a much, much different complexion. And from our standpoint, it's really given us, I think, a better chance to digest what is going on in the world of recruiting. We're not sitting here looking at this all day throughout today, trying to figure out where things stack up and how they fall. Mm-hmm. We've sort of known for a while. Today was really just the icing and the cherry on top. And now we can provide some analysis and look at it in terms of that construction. Is that right?
That all sounds correct. Although when you said icing cherry, I thought it's the hot honey on top of that sizzling pizza cheese. So I believe we have six categories, and we are vaguely connecting them to the idea of construction in past off seasons. We've done scheme theme month. We did the twos cruise. So I think we're going to, because college football and recruiting is largely about construction and remodeling and renovating, maybe demolishing your program and starting things anew, whether you have, you know, termites in the floorboards, whether you're adding a wing to your mansion, whether you are, you know, really trying to maybe have an open floor plan, open things up, look through the window, Ty. We are going to build a house out of the class of 2020, and we are going to try and hit all elements or some elements of building said recruiting and program construction house. And we can start wherever you'd like, but we have this. We're trying to hit more teams than just, you know, okay, Tennessee jumped into the top 10, which they did, by the way.
They did,
thanks to Malachi Wideman today. They jumped up to number 10, and Oklahoma, normally a top 5-7 program in recruiting rankings, I think fell out of the top 10. Oregon had a nice day. Miami had a nice day. Certainly Texas A&M. I think Georgia finished with the number one class officially. Clemson put together an unbelievable class. But these are things that I sort of discussed with Brandon before. So
let's
zag and talk about the construction elements we want to hit.
Let's zag, but just for important context, if you're picking this up midstream and you want to know, well, where, how did the top 10 shake out?
Okay.
We don't have to focus too much on this, but Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, that's your top five, followed by Texas A&M, a class that I want to talk about in a little bit. Auburn did very well. Florida at 8, Texas at 9, reeling in two big name quarterbacks.
Yes.
And as you said, Tennessee bubbling up to number 10, having themselves a nice day.
Yes. And some teams who are able to translate some on-field success into perhaps an improved, and we talked about this, I talked about this with Brandon a little while ago, Utah jumped up to number 30. I would imagine Baylor would have had a better class had they not had to go through a coaching change. Virginia, which ended up in the ACC championship game, not a great class, but they finished in the top 10 of the ACC. Otherwise, it's a lot of, I mean, Wisconsin, I think, had a nice class. Finished, I think, fifth in the Big Ten, which they never really get it done in February. They seem to get it done in the fall. So good for Wisconsin, stringing together some more blue chips in this class, perhaps, than usual. And I think I'm ready to get into this construction.
So why don't we start here?
Yeah.
Let's focus on the teams that are already coming to town with an embarrassment of riches. The teams that, you know, they've already got the mansion. They're adding on a solarium or some sort of luxurious doomsday bunker.
Home theater. Yeah, doomsday bunker. Yeah, these are the billionaires of college football. What are they doing? How are they adding that?
These are the super yachts with the helipad. That's what these programs are. So
yes,
let's start with the Clemson Tigers. Now, Clemson did not win this cycle. Not technically. They finished third, but they loaded up on defensive line again in a way that sort of screams what we saw last year. And that to me is terrifying. If you happen to go through and look where, just in general, some of their recruits rank according to 24/7 relative to some of their previous classes, three of their top eight all-time highest rated recruits came from this cycle.
That is 100% correct, Ty. I think it's Miles Murphy along the defensive line, Brian Brazee, if I pronounce that correctly, who I think might be the number one overall recruit in the country.
Yes.
And DJ Uiagalelei.
Oh, God, that's going to be trouble all year. That's going to be trouble.
He is one of many Californians and West Coasters who have looked at Pac-12 teams and said, I think I'm going to go east. I think I'm going to go and play for teams that more people watch.
By the numbers, Clemson did very well along the defensive line. They clearly added to what was a young core this past year, but they also stocked up on offensive line. You know, they've really made a lot of hay along that offensive line as well. It's important to protect their star quarterbacks. And by the numbers, more offensive linemen coming into this class than any other position, which is, I think, notable.
All right. Who else is adding helipads?
Alabama. Alabama's already got like four helipads.
Yeah.
What they've done at the running back position, what they've done at linebacker, again, is nothing short of incredible.
Yes.
The highest rated players in their class aren't even at the running back position.
No.
But I'm looking at Jace McClellan, an exciting prospect out of Texas. I'm looking at Roydell Williams, exciting prospect out of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at Jackson Bratton, a great name, inside linebacker from Alabama. These are all four-star kids, by the way.
Right.
The list goes on and on here. So I'm excited about Alabama to the extent that I can. At some point, it becomes old hat. But again, Nick Saban does it. He goes out, he gets the positions that he needs to keep this thing going in the direction that it's been.
Yeah, the linebackers and the edge players on it's a defensive hyperloop. Is that what Elon Musk is trying to build?
Yeah.
It's a defensive. They have the helipads. It's a ridiculous class. Bryce Young, we can talk about later with another construction question. But yeah, it's a ridiculous class. They were passed by Georgia because they put together, they don't have quite the helipad situation, but they close strong. And I think it's Kelly Ringo,
yep.
The corner out of Arizona, another one of those West Coast players who decided to head east. He headlines the class, but everywhere. I know they got a quarterback. I know they are fortified along the lines, but man, this Georgia class too, number one in the country year after year, even without, I don't know how much attention you paid to the Zach Evans situation, the running back from Texas who looks like his recruitment. It's going to be like a Bryce Brown, Terrell Pryor situation. It's going to go into the spring. And just weird smoke around the recruitment. Georgia let him out of his letter of intent in December. So we'll see where he ends up. But another, incredible class for Georgia, I'm assuming, number one.
Turning to Ohio State, two gigantic wide receiver recruits. Now, the first one is a gent by the name of Julian Fleming from Southern Columbia here in Pennsylvania. I have a good friend who had the opportunity to see Julian Fleming up close.
Mm-hmm.
He is ridiculous. This is an incredible signing by Ohio State. To be able to see a kid like this play in high school in the flesh is sort of an experience. He's a five-star. He's a number one wide receiver in the country. And that's not even the full story for Ryan Day. Also, Jackson Smith Najigba. Is that how I say it?
I hope not. Najigba? I don't know. My guess would be Najigba, but I don't know.
Rockwall, Texas. 6'1", 188, another five-star receiver, the fifth-rated wide receiver in college football.
Imagine you're C.J. Stroud, who was sort of a latecomer to the recruiting scene. He won the Elite 11 from Southern California, another West Coaster heading east. And you're looking at, where should I go? Then you watch what Justin Fields is doing on the field. And then you see Ryan Day, and specifically Brian Hartline, the new receivers coach for Ohio State. You know, everybody remembers him playing, but he won 24/7's Recruiter of the Year. And he brings in two five-star receivers in your same class. How do you say no? How do you say no to that type of opportunity? You get to sit behind Justin Fields for a year. It's a terrific situation at the top of that Ohio State class. And another West Coaster, G. Scott, from the state of Washington, heading east to play at Ohio State as well. Just rich getting richer for Ohio State.
Oregon, your Ducks finished with the 12th overall class?
Something like that, yeah. They take the Pac-12 and have the best recruiting class in the Pac-12.
How do you feel about the pieces they added? I know you're pretty high on the linebacking core.
Yes. Noah Sewell, who is the younger brother of Panay Sewell, the Outland Trophy winner, looks to be ridiculous. He's at he's playing to 265 linebacker and moves crazy well. Justin Flo was being compared, and Brandon Huffman talked about this, to a Vontez Burfict type. So just an out-of-control good middle linebacker. And yeah, their defensive class, they added a four-star defensive tackle today from, I think, the state of Alabama. But their class is very good. They had two quarterbacks, one of whom was pretty highly regarded, Jay Butterfield from Northern California, who's a Stanford legacy. All in all, it wasn't the 2019 class, but the 2020 Oregon class looks to be very, very strong at the top, especially on defense, which this is a defense that returns so much next year.
Right.
And they will have some pretty, pretty scary depth there, especially in a down Pac-12.
Is Jay Butterfield going to play?
Tyler Shuck looks to be the favorite. They seem to like him. He was Justin Herbert's backup this year. He got into some garbage time. He played well against USC in that blowout game. I could see him impressing. I think he's already enrolled, so that's at least a good sign for picking up the offense. But unless they add a grad transfer we don't know about, I know maybe there was some interest in KJ Costello before he headed to Mississippi State, I would imagine Tyler Shuck is pretty head and shoulders above the pack right now.
The other program here that I want to call out before we talk about some of the more tactical stuff, Oklahoma.
Yes.
Oklahoma's been in the playoff now, a couple years running. Oklahoma seemingly went out and reaffirmed its commitment to its offensive line.
Yep.
Its defensive line and its defensive backfield.
Smart to address that secondary. At last time we saw Oklahoma, it wasn't perfect.
Oklahoma eked out by Texas, so they didn't win with the Big 12's best recruiting class. But,
right,
you know, Nate Anderson, Andrew Rame, along the offensive line, two guards, two interior linemen to help bolster what Lincoln Riley is trying to build. It's, again, another situation where they already had the best offensive line in the Big 12 a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Add more beef to that line, keep the train rolling.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to what they added on defense. I know they look to the JC ranks for an interior defensive lineman to help get some pressure. I know they have a pretty good safety in this class. But yeah, Oklahoma, we're not going to question what Lincoln Riley's been able to do on offense. It's building that complete team. That's the lingering question.
So I guess on the flip side of teams, such as the Clemsons and Ohio States and Alabamas of the world, we didn't even touch Georgia. We can talk about them in a little bit. But
yeah.
What are some teams on the opposite end of the spectrum, Dan? Like, if we're thinking of this in terms of construction, Mm-hmm. What are some teams that have effectively raised their previous infrastructure and now they've got to start a new foundation? Maybe they had a really bad termite infestation. Like who has to start over and who has given you reason to believe or not believe in the strategies that they deployed here?
The bottom of the Power Five area of the sport is pretty bleak. It's not great. I mean, other than maybe Arkansas. Arkansas was pretty horrific last season, and I think there's some reason to believe based on the hire of Sam Pittman and the coordinators he was able to hire and their proximity to talent. I think I feel better about Arkansas. We can talk about new coaches or we can talk about down in the dumps teams, and sometimes that's both. But especially Arkansas, the jewel of their class is Miles Slusher, the safety. They recruited well up front, which I imagine Sam Pittman will continue to do. But they're really their big recruit this year was Felipe Franks,
right,
who comes in from Florida. And I'm a fan of the fact that 24/7 is sort of included transfers. I don't know if they give all the transfers new star ratings, whatever the case is. They've brought in a couple transfers. Last season, they had a top 25 class and brought in a couple good pass catchers. This year, Arkansas focused up front on defense, which from what we saw of Arkansas on defense last year, seems pretty smart. They need to focus everywhere. But of the teams that truly have termites, man, Kansas is at the bottom of the Big 12. They focused on receiver and offensive line. They didn't bring anybody in. All their transfer and transfer portal situations are outgoing. Arizona is the bottom of the Pac-12 right now. They focused on wide receiver, offensive line, and defensive back. They bring in an all-purpose back and Frank Brown from Texas, who's promising. Brendan Schooler was a starting receiver at Oregon. He joins his brother at Arizona, albeit on the opposite side of the field. They lost a lot of bodies to transfer from their secondary, and 2019 wasn't much better. So I don't know if the outlook is all that good. I don't think there's all that reason for optimism unless you're a big believer in the new coaching staff at Arizona. Vanderbilt, their AD steps down yesterday. Derek Mason has brought in the last place class in the SEC. They focused on an offensive line. They lost quarterbacks, plural. So they brought in quarterbacks, plural. There's not a ton of reason for optimism there. Maryland might be the worst situation of all. They lost a ton of bodies. I'm seeing 17, 18 guys in the transfer portal because Tyrell Pigram has entered the portal. Last year's class wasn't anything special. The big jewel, though, of all of these classes that perhaps are representing programs that need to rebuild foundations in a major way, Rakim Jarrett, local five-star receiver. Talked about him a little bit with Huffman, but their focus this year was on the offensive line receiver, headlined by Jarrett, and defensive back. So of the teams that really, really, needed to bring in fresh bodies and sort of find a reason and maybe convince higher level recruits that you can play right away, you can be the reason for the turnaround. Right now, those four schools to me, and we can get into Rutgers as well because they hired a new coach. They're, tearing things down to the studs. There's some optimism with Greg Schiano because of how well he is versed in the state of New Jersey, a pretty talented state. Chris Long is the headliner there. I think he's listed as an athlete. Looks like he'll play receiver, but, that's always up for, we'll see what happens in camp. They were very active in the transfer market, and I'm including all of that here because they bring in Peyton Powell, a former blue-chip quarterback from Baylor. They bring in Michigan interior defensive lineman Michael Dwumfor. Brendan White played a lot at the end of 2018 for Ohio State at safety, sort of lost favor in this new defense, the 2019 Ohio State. But Greg Schiano has his familiarity with him and brings him to Rutgers. So I would say, weirdly enough, of the teams that really look like they were heading in a very terrible direction, Rutgers, I think they're the temperature of bodies there is warmer than the other places.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was my takeaway. I think I like the staff he hired. Sean Gleason comes in from, he was Princeton, then Oklahoma State. Now he, of course, is familiar with that area. So I don't love that they're in the Big Ten East, but in terms of fielding a competitive team compared against those compatriots, yeah, I think it's Rutgers.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
I focused a lot of my time looking at teams that seemingly have a window.
I like this.
Seemingly have a window to make a jump. Like maybe the house is in order for the most part.
Yeah.
Get a new throw, maybe paint a wall or two. But by and large, you got key pieces in place.
Right.
Other divisional opponents have some issues or some questions.
Maybe we're regrouting.
Just like simple stuff, changing a few light bulbs.
Uh-huh.
Immediate issues that needed to be resolved, perhaps through recruiting, but teams that seemingly are in a really good place now as we enter the 2020 season.
Going in the right direction, and because of what's going on in their division, you know, a team atop the division losing a bunch, or a new coach for a key rival, something like that, you have windows. College football is about taking advantage of windows, right?
Let's start with Texas A&M, Dan.
Okay.
So this is an outstanding recruiting class. They finished sixth in the nation, and it comes at an exciting time because the Aggies lose, what, three starters from last year? Most of the team is back.
Right.
Jimbo's in a good spot where he's got a really good team coming back. And while you're always looking for those immediate impact guys, he's in a spot where he can look to build depth for the future without really compromising the present, which is a good spot to be in.
Huge.
The other key point here, the SEC West is good. It's always good. It's not without its share of questions in 2020.
100%.
Lord knows the schedule for A&M isn't nearly the murderer's row it was last year. It's still tough, but it's not the gauntlet it was in 2019. There is a chance, and I hate to go like all Missouri here and jinx them in early February, but
no.
There is a chance that they're 9-1 or 10-0 headed into the last 2 weeks of the year when they're on the road at Bama and then home against LSU.
Yeah.
What I like about what Jimbo did here, first off, he has seemingly focused on pass defense. It was really bad 2 years ago. It did improve last season.
Right.
But now he is very, very out there in trying to solidify the back end of that defense. 2 4-star safeties, Jalen Jones, Antonio Johnson, they both can come in and help with the back end of that defense and perhaps right away. So that that to me is maybe a plug and play situation. We'll have to wait and see about playing time, but certainly some bodies that can help. Otherwise, he made a real concerted effort here to add depth to the offensive line. And we've said it once, he said it 1,000 times. It's essential in the SEC to have really good offensive line play. He focused in particular on the interior offensive line.
Yes.
I don't know if either of those moves will be enough to spring them to a 12-0 season, but I like the fact that he's able to add depth for the future and at the same time, maybe some guys who he can plug and play now. I think he did a good job.
Yeah, and one of the things last year, maybe the biggest thing last year, was just generating bigger plays on offense. And they did well at receiver. I think they had a quarterback last year, and it's Haynes King this year for Texas A&M, if you have the class in front of you. So they bring in a blue-chip quarterback of the future to compete for that job once Kellen Mond exhausts his eligibility. And also, Jimbo Fisher did a really nice job expanding the recruiting footprint of Texas A&M. You see where they've brought in commitments from, and it's really, I mean, a big guy from Illinois, New Jersey, Texas, Louisiana, Arizona, Arkansas. So they're not relying, even though, you know, East Texas is a very fruitful area for recruiting, they went out and seemingly found the best players for them no matter where they were. They went into, I think, Georgia, they went Maryland. So really good job for Texas A&M. And the specific window, and you mentioned it having an easier schedule, but which quarterbacks right now are proven to be dangerous in the SEC West? Mac Jones? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Probably Mac Jones. Is that the entire list? I'm not terrified of Bo Nix right now. Maybe he evolves into that kind of quarterback. The Ole Miss quarterback situation is up in the air with where Lane Kiffin goes, Mississippi State.
KJ Costello?
Certainly up. Yeah, I mean, it's going... KJ Costello in an air raid is certainly interesting, but this is a new quarterback, new system, new school. So, especially with his injuries from last season, I can't say I'm confident that it's just going to be a turnkey situation. I feel really good about the window A&M has to sort of take another jump up, whatever that ascension looks like.
Yeah, and to your point, recruited from 13 different states here. You compare that with UT, only two states, Texas and Arizona. Got their big gun from Arizona. We'll talk about that momentarily.
Bijan.
Bijan. But otherwise, A&M, I think, is in a good spot. Penn State, let's talk about Penn State for a second.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, in a very good spot. Recruiting's been strong. We saw it last season. They were able to get contributions from a bunch of the young guns on the roster.
Sure.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
The immediate needs here, at least from my vantage point, are in the passing game, both in creating it and in stopping it. Now, they do bring back Pat Freiermuth. He's going to still be around this coming season. So he's last year, I promise you.
Baby.
So that's a good starting point. Jahan Dotson is back. That helps too. But KJ Hamler's going pro. They're having some guys transfer out. I just feel like the wide receiving core is very thin. So could a freshman like Keandre Lambert from Virginia step up and make an impact? He's a name that some have pointed to as someone who could step in, but it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of depth beyond those top two guys. And I said on a previous show about how Sean Clifford, I really liked him in the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, I didn't quite feel as rosy about his chances moving forward.
But a new offensive coordinator, there's a window to certainly surprise people and improve on offense there. Yeah,
I think there's reason for optimism, and there were many points, to be fair, where his wide receiving core just did not do him any favors.
Correct. It took Jawan Johnson going to America's school, the University of Oregon, to really hone his craft. I get it.
So I'm curious to see if some of the bodies they bring in at receiver can help kind of take that offense to the next level. And defensively, look, like, we saw some breakdowns against the pass last year. They were super banged up at corner, but they do have some options coming in on the back end of that secondary. Enzo Jennings, who I think is an early commit, Tyler Rudolph, some guys that could play again back end of that secondary. They really needed help there. And we saw it in a game like a Minnesota, where, frankly, they couldn't stop the pass. Minnesota's passing game was just too much for them.
Yeah.
And they need to have some solutions there. But there are questions, maybe like outside Ohio State in the Big Ten East.
Yeah, and even Ohio State, you don't have to block Chase Young in 2020. No. That's enormous. You don't have to throw into a Jeff Hafley defense with those dudes in the secondary for Ohio State. That's large. Shea Patterson, gone. Michigan's defense, new look. Michigan's offense, new look. Donovan Peoples-Jones, gone. There's a lot to be... I mean, Michigan State, we have no idea what Sparty's going to look like in 2020, who's coaching them, what systems they're going to be running on either side of the ball. So Penn State's window, outside of, yes, Justin Fields and Ryan Day are still in Columbus, but even... I can't imagine Ohio State's defense, even if they're excellent, looks like what it did in 2019. So there's a window for Penn State if Sean Clifford and Kirk Sciarca can make beautiful, beautiful offensive magic together.
Let's talk about ASU. You mentioned ASU earlier. ASU, a 7-5 regular season, 8-5 after winning the bowl over Florida State.
Right.
Three of their five losses were one possession games. It was a gritty team. In general, I think ASU under Herm Edwards has been a really good story. Way better than we expected after that weird press conference a couple of years ago.
I think that's reasonable.
It goes without saying. Another solid class this year. So things are going in a good direction, especially given that they've got Jaden Daniels that they can build around. Again, freshman quarterback, 17 touchdowns, only two picks as a true freshman. He has a lot of the tools that you like. There's reason to be excited there.
For sure.
I guess my bigger picture question, and I struggled with this, is whether we feel ASU is truly complete enough at this juncture to take that proverbial jump. Like, how open really is the window? Because I don't remember a moment outside of like September or maybe mid-October where on the show you and I were talking about ASU as a genuinely good team that we weren't at all skeptical about.
I mean, I wasn't thrilled when they beat Oregon and knocked them out of playoff contention in Tempe that Saturday night. I mean, I think my disappointment was a backwards compliment to how well they played and made those key passes in those key moments that night. They lost four in a row before that win over Oregon at home in the desert. But no, I think it's more of what ASU has done in hiring. They've recruited well in Southern California now that there's that USC-UCLA recruiting vacuum for a number of reasons. And I think they're just one of those teams with, you know, now USC certainly looking really good on offense, but making changes on defense. UCLA not looking like a contender. Utah should be once again very good, but they have to make a change at quarterback. Well, I guess it might be Jake Bentley this year. We'll see who ends up starting and winning that quarterback job for the Utes. But in terms of opportunity, in terms of window, in terms of talent level, and now in year three of the Herm Edwards era, I don't think they have a tough September. They have BYU before they have SC, but it's Oregon State, UCLA, Colorado, Wazoo with a new coach. Cal should be pretty good. I know they're in Eugene, but they have Utah at home. And Arizona is kind of a, and by kind of, I mean a complete mess in Tucson for the Territorial Cup. So schedule, quarterback continuity, recruiting improvement. I think it's a really nice window for ASU. I really like LV Bunkley Shelton. I know you like Johnny Wilson. So Elijah Badger, a pretty highly regarded recruit. They did well on offense. They did pretty well up front on defense. I think ASU is definitely a window team.
So you mentioned Johnny Wilson. I like Johnny Wilson.
Yeah.
Big kid from your old stomping ground in Southern California.
My alma mater.
But I like the two tackle transfers coming in from Stanford and Texas A&M.
They need the help up front.
They really need the help up front. And Herm, I think when you look at the class, regardless of whether or not you feel there's a legit window here, Herm definitely made an effort to bring in some athletes to give the offense a boost and just improve it in as well-rounded a fashion as he could. So I think he did a good job. We can debate the merits of that window at some other point in time. But by and large, a pretty good job in, let's face it, a side of the conference that has so many questions. We could do podcast upon podcast talking about the questions of the Pac-12 South.
Sure. Let's keep looking at windows. We've got a big round house. What are round houses called? Yurts?
An igloo?
Well, igloo. Yeah, I think a yurt. I'm looking that up. So we have to have more window teams. ACC window?
North Carolina.
You're right.
North Carolina. North Carolina. I'll say it again. I think I said in the preseason that if North Carolina got to four wins, it would be a crazy revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, Daniel, this is a team that finished with six, eventually won the bowl game.
Yep.
And now they sit ahead of Florida State.
They
finished
do.
Third in ACC recruiting behind Clemson and just a bit behind the Miami Hurricanes. So by all accounts, they did very, very well. It helps to have Sam Howell leading that charge at quarterback.
You have,
again, the signal caller that you can build around. I saw an effort here to boost defense.
Yes.
I think it's a really good class in that respect. Desmond Evans and Miles Murphy, two four-star defensive ends. They bring in a four-star tackle. They bring in two four-star safeties. Mack Brown knows that he needs to get better as a defensive entity. It can't all be on the arm of Sam Howell. And though he did add some pieces along that offense that can help, what he did on defense is definitely pretty striking.
Yes. I am excited for North Carolina football moving forward. And it's been a little while since I was able to say that. But with Virginia losing Bryce Perkins, with Pitt's offense not really looking like it's going to do much, Miami's still a huge question mark, even with De'Arik King, but that's a new system, new coordinator with Rhett Lashley. Duke seems to be not heading in the right direction. Georgia Tech is going to take a while longer. The division for them, I mean, we'll see what happens with Virginia Tech, but there's transition there among that coaching staff. The window is right there for North Carolina. Yeah. If Sam Howell improves from being one of the best, I don't know, three freshman quarterbacks in the country last year, depending on how everything falls for you. Keaton Slovis is in that conversation, Dylan Gabriel. But yeah, they should be winning. What you said, their record this past year was 6-6 plus a win in the bowl.
That's correct. Yep.
They should be winning 9 games next year.
Yeah.
I don't have their non-conference schedule in front of them. If their defense can improve, especially against the pass, and I don't even love all the quarterbacks they'll be facing, they become a pretty dangerous team.
Last window team here that I'll throw out. Texas is back, baby.
They got that window. They have that window. Back. They made changes.
Texas is back. They made some changes. They won the Big 12 recruiting race by a nose over the Oklahoma Sooners.
Right.
And it's an interesting class the way they went about formulating this. So their top prospect, as I mentioned earlier, Bijan Robinson, running back out of Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
Number one running back in the country. But beyond that, they went out and made a very concerted effort to try and secure a quarterback of the future. So Sam Howell, not going to be there forever. Sam Howell could get hurt tomorrow, even though he's been pretty durable. Hudson Card and Jaquindon Jackson.
Yeah, they're playing the Hudson Card.
Yeah, they're 2 4-star quarterbacks that they were able to reel in from the state of Texas, in addition to the other 16 recruits that they got from the great state of Texas.
Right.
So that's all notable. I think that bubbles to the surface and it definitely stands out on the top line. But they need defense. This is a class that you can only construct if you know you need defense. I don't know how else to put it, Dan. I'm looking at how they did this, how they broke it down by the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot at defensive line, linebacker, defensive back.
Yeah.
Even in the trenches along the offensive line.
Yeah, they focused on offensive skill these past couple of years, and even felt like they focused on the secondary a couple of years ago with a ridiculous class, and strong at safety this year. And they have a window, I mean, essentially because we don't know what to expect out of presumably Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. We have a number of second-year guys in the conference. Sam Ellinger's back for his 17th year. If there is going to be a season in which they put it all together, and the guys that you are mentioning, these are probably rotation guys because all healthy, Texas has a good amount of talent on both sides of the ball. But the window is there that even if these rotation guys work out as true freshmen, they should be in a really good spot. I'm not sure who you're terrified of right now with, Baylor, who was really, really strong last year. They're working in a new coach and we'll see what this offense looks like. Defense, they should be very strong once again, I would imagine. TCU, I don't feel great about right now. West Virginia, I think, still has a ways. Kansas State, Texas has a, their window is so obvious, which should be terrifying for Longhorn fans.
What else do we got here?
So we've alluded to some teams with new coaches, new building crews, Ty. Just learning the architecture, looking at the blueprints, figuring out their own blueprints. They have to know where beams are going at this new place. They have to know the plumbing, the electricity. They're learning on the job. They haven't had much time to piece together these classes. But I think it's important, and we talked about this once again a couple months ago when we did our early signing day show. Ole Miss, lower part of the SEC in terms of recruiting class under Lane Kiffin. They focused on the trenches and in the secondary. I know you'd love to call him Demon Clowney, but it's Demon. I apologize, Ty. I know. I think promising thing for Ole Miss is, one, the defense took a nice step forward last year under Mike McIntyre. It's DJ Durkin, at least as the co-defensive coordinator. And even with all of the legitimate baggage he brings along with his name, they should have a good defense. He's been a good defensive coordinator along the way, or they should have an improving defense. Last year was a huge class, like 30, 31 guys under Matt Luke, and it's around the same talent level this year. Jerry and Ely obviously made an early impact for the Rebels. And they've been pretty active on the transfer market, brought in a couple tight ends, safety from Georgia. They convinced some of their guys that entered the transfer portal to come back to Oxford. So Ole Miss, pretty good. I think Lane Kiffin should probably continue to do a good, I would imagine, top 18 classes for Lane Kiffin moving forward, considering his record as a recruiter and what Ole Miss is at least near recruiting-wise. Staying in state, Mike Leach, pretty similar. The jewel of this class, probably Emmanuel Forbes. They need all the help they can get in the secondary after what we did or didn't see from the dogs last year. Jordan Davis, I think, is a JUCO guy. And it was, again, if they can pressure the quarterback, that's better than what they were able to do for much of 2019. KJ Costello is the big recruit. We alluded right to him earlier. That's the big recruit for Mississippi State this year. How quickly can he get comfortable in what everybody that has played for him has said is the most simple offense imaginable? The air raid, Mike Leach's version of the air raid. And Felipe Franks also in the conference going to Arkansas. So at least there's somewhat recruiting-wise interesting quarterbacks heading to the SEC West. And Scott Lashley, another guy coming in, a former Alabama blue-chip offensive lineman to fortify Mississippi State up front. We'll stay in the SEC. Mizzou, also the lower part of the SEC. But Ty, if you can, please play Eli Drinkwitz absolutely losing his marbles.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, so that is id, Ty. That is pure, unfiltered id over I don't think he's a blue star corner, but a corner who chose Mizzou and had some late offers from big places. And so I respect it, Ty. It was the adult version of, do you remember the video where the kid gets the Super Nintendo for Christmas?
Oh, I was gonna say,
my God!
I mean, it was a little Howard Dean in there, wasn't there?
It was Howard Dean put into a blender with the spirit of whatever that video. It was Super Soaker or a Super Nintendo. It was something super.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that Eli Drinkwitz is amped on this signing day. They bring in Damon Hazelton, which I think is something. He led Virginia Tech in targets and touchdowns last year at receiver. It was not a great class last year. They brought in some defensive backs. So this year's class was pretty even all over the place, pretty spread out. They did focus a little bit on receiver, so I suppose we'll see. Mizzou has a lot to work on after what they finished looking like last year. Washington is on the other end of things, Ty. We've talked about Jimmy Lake a little bit, but this class was really strong from the Huskies and from Jimmy Lake. I'm still a little bit out on the offensive coordinator hire, John Donovan. You probably have more thoughts about that than I do. But Savelle Smalls, edge rusher, who looks to be, you know, a nationally elite edge rusher. I know he disappointed a little bit at the All-Star games, but looks to be another great Washington defensive player. Jalen McMillan, I know everybody in the country wanted at receiver. Ethan Garbers is the younger brother of Chase Garbers.
Yes, there is another.
And that Washington quarterback job is pretty open. Jacob Sermon, Dylan Morris, Chase Garbers. We'll see. They all sound like West Coast quarterbacks to me. They did lose out on KJ Costello. That's a name that we have said a lot this episode. Last year's class was also incredible, especially up front on defense. So just from a pure talent standpoint, the Washington building crew, they have an understanding for the neighborhood, for permits, for laws, for gardening, whatever needs to happen at Washington.
Let me fast forward.
Jump
over some of the other teams I know we have listed.
Yeah.
Florida State.
Yes.
Florida State, as we mentioned earlier, came in behind North Carolina in terms of ACC recruiting. We know there's work to do there.
Mm-hmm.
What did you see from that building crew?
Obviously late for Mike Norvell coming into the process, not there for the early signing period, but a pretty good, but not great. I think they finished fourth in the ACC, 20th nationally, at least in that area. The focus, rightfully so, was on the offensive line, a little bit on receiver. Chuba Purdy, I think, is the headline name, along with Damori Tate. Purdy is the younger brother of Brock. He was committed to Louisville forever, and he flipped to Florida State late in the process. It was an active year in both directions for Florida State, both coming and going. They lost a couple blue chip receivers or pass catchers and a tight end who left for Georgia and a receiver who went back to the West Coast to Oregon State. But they bring in Jayshon Corbin from Texas A&M. The class wasn't where it was last year, but I imagine with a full cycle, Florida State should at least be back in that top dozen conversation.
Okay. Interesting.
I mentioned Rutgers, Boston College. There's not too much to talk about. They focused on the offensive line. We'll see. And Wazoo is the lower part of the Pac-12 in terms of talent, but Jaden Delora, same high school as Tua Tagovailoa, Marcus Mariota. in Hawaii. So that makes sense with Nick Rolovich being a good fit, although he signed, I think, before Nick Rolovich took the job. So nothing too exciting transfer-wise. It was the worst class in the conference in 2019. So if they can at least get to maybe, it's just a tough place to recruit to in terms of available talent, high-end talent. But, I don't know, 9th or 10th in the conference? We'll see. I think they can be pretty dangerous.
So one thing that we kind of alluded to here is turnkey solutions.
Yes. Always nice when you can just walk in and there's your house.
You can walk in, there's your house. And we have seen this, I think, slowly develop over the course of the last 10 years, certainly in the time that we've been doing this podcast, but freshman quarterbacks are coming into the college ranks much better prepared than ever before. And so to have freshman standouts like we saw this past year, a good number of them really, it's becoming far more common. It's always exciting, but it stands to reason that some of the names coming in this year, given the fact that we've got questions around college football at many starting quarterback positions, some of these guys could be in a position to really make an immediate impact. So give me three names. I have three and a half, I'll say, on my list of freshman quarterbacks that you look at the situation, you look at what they bring to the table, and you could say, yeah, I could see that quarterback either coming in and outright winning the job,
right,
or winning the job by, say, week 4 or 5. You got any names that jump out to you?
There's nothing super obvious. Bryce Young is, everything I've heard about him is he's twitchy. He has that special potential. Maybe he's a little bit like Kyler Murray. He's not huge. He's going to get that comparison because I think he's under 6 feet tall, but he still finished as the number one quarterback in the nation. And while I think Mac Jones gave Nick Saban and the offensive staff every reason to think that he can win a lot of games for Alabama, he's not obvious like, you know, Tua was before him when healthy. So I think Bryce Young is certainly, he's going to see the field in some fashion. There are quarterbacks that I feel if they are thrust into a situation because of injury or something happening to a starter will miss limited beats. You know, it's DJ Uyunglele, I'm just DJU for Clemson, who's just built like a tank. He's like 6'5", 250. You know, Luke Doty is interesting to me at South Carolina because Ryan Helinski wasn't amazing, you know, being thrown into the fire as a true freshman. So we'll see there. And physically, I don't think he's huge, but we'll see. He's well regarded. Ethan Garbers is a name that I know our friend Yogi Roth really likes a lot. And it's tough to expect a true freshman to just win a job outright immediately. It happens. We've, you know, Sam Howell is a best case scenario. Dylan Gabriel, a best case scenario, beating out Brandon Wimbush last year. But there's nobody that I think is going to, that is so good right now. And I guess, you know, Chuba Purdy, we'll see. It's not like anybody at Florida State is incredible and has a lock on that job. But there's nobody right now to me that says, okay, they are immediately displacing a presumed starter or somebody who has been waiting in the wings. But, you know, at the top of this class, there's enough talent there at quarterback where, yeah, if something happens to a starter, they can come in and move the ball.
So Bryce Young is the one that jumps out. Bryce Young, as you said, he's a slider build, 5'11". He's headed to Alabama. Mm-hmm. And of course, Mac Jones is there. Mac Jones is going to have a thing or two to say about who gets that job. But you could see a situation where they play Bryce Young because he does bring an interesting skill set. From everything I've read about him, he is pretty much unflappable.
Mm-hmm.
He does have a slider frame, but he seems to play his best when the pocket breaks down. Like most of these quarterbacks, his deep ball could be improved upon. But the comp that I saw was Russell Wilson.
Wow.
And that, you know, maybe a smaller version of Russell Wilson. At this point, he needs to fill out. He's only 18. But
yeah,
nonetheless,
that's
a pretty good comp if you're getting that kind of quarterback. So it's tough to take a guy like that into a situation like Alabama where he does have such a good supporting cast and not at least think about it.
Yeah.
That's intriguing to me. Another one here that I'll throw out. We haven't talked a lot about Georgia, even though they got the number one class.
And Jamie Newman as well.
Jamie Newman comes over from Wake Forest. He is the transfer, but Carson Beck is their prize quarterback in this class. He's a 4-star. He was Mr. Football, as they all are in the great state of Florida. Hails from Jacksonville. he's a different quarterback, right? He's not Bryce Young at all. He's 6'4 and a half, 226. He's a much bigger kid. The comp I saw for him was DeShone Kizer on 24/7.
Okay, big arm.
And I wrestled with that a little bit. And I was wondering, if you put DeShone Kizer in that Georgia offense, how would they do? And he'd do pretty well, I think.
Right.
He's got a pretty good supporting cast already. Obviously, the recruiting has been there. And if the Jamie Newman thing doesn't work out, you could definitely see a situation where Kirby Smart hands the keys over to someone who's going to do enough to get the ball to playmakers and turn the ball over to defense and win a lot of football games. So that's an interesting situation because there's a supporting cast.
Yeah.
In place
already. Absolutely. No, he'll have good receivers. George Pickens obviously highlights the situation in Athens. And the other advantage is it's not like an offensive coordinator comes in with his guy, preconceived notions. Todd Monken is new. This is a new offense, we're assuming, for Georgia. And I'm actually going to stay in the state because of Jeff Sims. And he was committed to Florida State, now Georgia Tech. And if you watched Georgia Tech football last year, you didn't come away thinking, man, do they have passing figured out?
Yeah, no.
And Jeff Sims, the four-star quarterback, I think, from Florida, he's skinny, but the ball flies off of his hand. I like watching him a lot. In the limited amount of tape I've seen on him, I think he'll at least compete. I think he has an opportunity because of how much they're still overhauling the offense in Atlanta to see some time.
The one that I am super intrigued by is Harrison Bailey at Tennessee.
Okay.
So Tennessee still has Jared Garantano.
Obviously.
And Jared Garantano has been all over the map. Sometimes he's been really good. Other times he's been really bad. I don't know if this is a situation where Harrison Bailey comes in and plays right away. I don't think it is. But he's a four-star kid out of Marietta, Georgia. He's got prototypical size. The comp I saw was Kyle Orton, who was really good in college, if you remember Kyle Orton.
That's true. He absolutely was.
He, by all accounts, is the kind of guy who could thrive in a situation where he's playing off a lot of play action. And it seems to me like that's a spot at Tennessee that could suit him well. If it falls through with Garantano, and if Harrison Bailey is given an opportunity, that's another situation where really good recruiting class. There's a lot to like about the way Tennessee played second half of the year last season. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting situation to me as someone who could come in.
Yeah, and big dude. He physically seems to be there. It's how quickly can you pick up the offense? How quickly, you know, just being thrust into the starting quarterback at Tennessee. It's a lot to ask.
No, for sure.
Playing Georgia, playing Florida. Yeah, this is a lot. Playing South Carolina's defense. I wouldn't envy a situation like that, no matter how physically ready he may seem. I think Jared Garantano has that job on lock, but we've seen bad Jarrett.
Yes, and exactly.
It's ugly.
It's really ugly. So
I could see reps, be it in garbage time, be it against some smaller teams early. Sure, we should be able to see something from him, even though there's a couple of guys ahead of him right now on the depth chart.
Now the name, and I said 3.5. The final name I'll throw out here, I really want to say Deuce Hogan at Iowa.
Yeah, just because his name is Deuce Hogan.
I don't honestly believe that this is going to be a situation where he's going to do anything other than redshirt.
I want to move on to teams because I have a natural transition from this discussion point that are desperate.
Oh no!
For
okay.
Updating and remodeling, Ty. You've been in houses. I've been in houses. You walk in, you're like, oh, you love 1992. You really loved what 1992 looked like, where it's just white carpet and weird mirror placements, and there's a sunken living room. You know what I'm talking about, Ty.
I do.
The Property Brothers or Fixer Up or one of our favorite shows on was HGTV.
Yep.
Need some shiplap. Let's start with some remodeling, because let's start with Michigan State, whose offense was terrible. It's a big question mark at this point because we do not know what to expect out of this Michigan State team. We know that they focused on receiver, that, you know, a lot of receivers and running backs are out. They lost offensive skill to transfer guys. Darius Snow is the jewel of the class, but this is a Michigan State team who recruited well enough when they were winning games. They, you know, whether it was Malik McDowell, whoever, where they we're getting 3, 4, 5, 6 blue chips eventually in a class. There were zero in this year's class, lower part of the Big Ten. So not a lot of optimism for immediate retooling, remodeling, and renovation in East Lansing. But UCLA is a little bit interesting to me. They bring in a blue chip quarterback. They weren't great at quarterback last season, even though we went into it in a promising way. The focus in this class was up front on defense, which it probably should have been. Damian Sellers, great linebacker. Looks like I watched a little bit of his tape from Arizona. Quarterback from New Hampshire. The Granite State, Ty.
That's right.
And his name is Parker McQuarrie. And where is Granite Mind, Ty? In a quarry.
Yeah, that's right.
That is a fun fact that only Tom Hammond can
appreciate. That is true. Very true.
UCLA desperate for some renovation and remodeling. We'll see what happens in year three, but at least their recruiting is improving from where it was as they lose a ton of guys. They lost Theo Howard to Oklahoma. Unfortunately, he gets hurt. NC State, at least they finished in the top half. I think they finished number 6 in the ACC. They went hard after receivers. They revamped their coaching staff. Porter Rooks is the jewel of this class. They don't bring any transfers in, but 12 guys will not be in Carter Finley next year. I guess that's probably headlined by Matt McKay, who I think a lot of people are optimistic about at quarterback. He goes to Montana State. So I'm not feeling great about NC State renovation. TCU, 3rd in the Big 12. Your beautiful, beautiful purple horn frogs, Ty.
Mm.
You're ready, right?
I've been ready since 2008.
A lot of receiver, a lot of offensive line. They bring back Doug Meacham to take over the offense. He once at least co-coordinated. Justin Rogers is out. Michael Collins is out. So it's a good class. This is 3rd in the Big 12. I'm not previewing TCU right now, but in terms of at least some optimism, there is reason to feel pretty good in Fort Worth. And that's to me is the jewel of these renovation cases. I don't feel good otherwise about, Mizzou is desperate after last year. We went through their recruiting class and it's pretty good. I mean, the Eli Drinkwitz factor is elite, but, I think of anybody's houses, anybody's homes, the Horned Frogs have the best chance to desync that living room.
All right. Desync the living room.
Desync the living room. That's all I ask. A sunken living room is rough.
Okay, well,
how do you feel about Notre Dame's class? Is there anybody from Notre Dame's class that makes you, and you can play it one more time, have a reaction just like Eli Drinkwitz did?
Is there anything
upon
that
a
gave
singular
me,
commit or class? Yeah,
anything that gave me the full Drinkwitz?
Yeah,
I gotta be honest. It's tough to sort of compose myself after the Kyle Hamilton get last year. Like I'm still kind of
okay.
I'm still sort of in the glow of that one. I have a very unnatural affinity for Chris Tyree.
Okay.
The all-purpose back who I think comes from Virginia. Not a big kid, but really exciting. Someone who could give them some explosiveness. I really like that. What I like
about
they've
been running
class,
the ball well these past couple years.
Yeah, but there's a bit of uncertainty about which direction that running game is headed.
Okay.
We saw questions on that front last year. Of course, they had some losses that they had to replace and injuries that they needed to deal with. So now as they kind of shift from Chip Long over to Thomas Rees, of course, it's a question of, well, what does that running game look like? And I feel better knowing that they have some other weapons that they can use. They did go heavy at receiver, though, and I think that's important. Notre Dame has done very well at the receiver position the last couple years. It is a position they need to restock. So I'm excited to see guys like Jordan Johnson, who comes up from Missouri. I'm excited to Xavier Watts, who is maybe only a 3-star, but someone that I've read a lot of exciting stuff about as well. Even at tight end, you know, their biggest recruit was a gentleman by the name of Michael Meyer, who is somehow only 18, but in his photo looks like he might be 38.
Yeah, he looks like J.J. Watt's uncle.
He's incredible, from Kentucky. Yeah. 6'4", 234. He's a 5-star tight end. I like the fact that they went out. They got some of these guys that can make an impact on the offensive side of the ball. They didn't do it so much in a way that it disadvantaged other aspects of their recruiting class. They did pick up a couple offensive and defensive linemen, but I think by and large, when you look at this, there was clearly a focus on adding some receiver options. And I like that. I think they did a pretty good job. Not as high a class as they've had in recent memory, but I think pound for pound, a pretty good one. I think they were like number 17 or something overall.
I also saw they brought in a starting receiver from Northwestern. I think he probably has to sit out a year. I don't know what his transfer status is. Isaiah Pryor from Ohio State, safety transfer Notre Dame. And Brandon Huffman talked about, I think it was Tosh Baker, the offensive lineman he loves from Arizona, basketball player as well, tall guy, should develop well.
6'7" at Notre Dame. Big dude.
So good class for Notre Dame.
Very good class.
And no more Chase Claypool, right? He's done.
Chase Claypool is going to the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. So they need to replace a good chunk of production there.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I think by and large, they did a really good job. Notre Dame won't be without its fair share of questions going into 2020, but this is not a class that you're going to look at and say, oh boy, they're in trouble. This is a pretty good class.
They will be without Phil Dracovic, who transferred to Boston College.
They will be without Phil Dracovic.
Also, Ty, before we sign off, how many corrections do you think will be made by people listening to the show via email or Twitter or solidverbal.reddit.com?
Over under about 6.5.
That's what I was thinking. I was right around a touchdown, that we pronounced a name wrong, that we got a position wrong, that we, somebody has torn their ACL, so clearly they're not going to be an early impact guy this coming fall. I would maybe we need an old stat boy type person.
The stat boy.
That PTI used to have.
Okay.
Because on these recruiting shows, 6.5 is, if we're under 6.5, I would consider the show to be a success.
That sounds about right. Okay.
Yes.
Now taking applications for stat boy.
Yeah. Or stat girl, stat lad, stat gal, whatever you want to call yourself.
All right. Well, that's National Signing Day.
It is.
We will talk more about this as we progress forward. Lord knows there is plenty of news to discuss. It doesn't seem to ever end, even though we are now squarely in the college football offseason. So we'll be back in about a week.
Yes.
Talk through more of what's going on. We've got a lot of fun stuff planned. As we said at the top, subscribe to the show so you get everything delivered to your podcasting app of choice automatically. Mm-hmm. You can also sign up for the newsletter. Again, as I said at the top, we are starting to think about live shows for later this year.
What's up, Ketchikan?
Yeah, if you want to be notified early and often about those, get yourself the best chance of tickets. You can sign up for the newsletter. Just go to solidverbal.com, fill out a newsletter form. Just give us your email. We promise we're not going to spam you. It's not.
What is our number one? Because we discuss this and we know where our downloads come from.
Yep.
So we knew when the national championship game was in Atlanta, for instance, we're like, we have a solid chunk of people in or around Atlanta that we think might show up. And they did. We had an amazing crowd in Atlanta. Or Chicago had a great crowd. Dallas, Fort Worth area had a great crowd. We've been strategic. What is a city that is probably nowhere near our most listened to city or town or whatever, but there's a robust little following? Like, are we huge in Missoula? Like, at least compared to other podcasts in doing, like, do you always see like, oh, we've got like a steady 83 people listening in Paris, Texas?
Well,
something surprising?
So I'll say this. I don't have in front of me the full list of where we're downloaded, but I do have a top 25.
Okay.
And the top 25 has had some interesting results over the span of
the last year.
The one that jumps out to me as being one of our most downloaded cities is Philly.
Oh, okay. Love Philly.
Now, Philly doesn't exactly fall into the, small town motif, so to speak, but
Templetown.
Philly has done really well for us. And Philly's obviously very close to me. So that would be an intriguing spot.
Dark horse.
Yeah, an intriguing spot. Some of the other ones that I find of interest.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard good things about Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, I've been there. It's a good time.
I've never been to the Pacific Northwest, at least
in
not
your life,
as,
ever?
I've been to Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
But I've never been to Seattle, and Seattle does pretty well.
Okay.
That's another one. And one other one that I'll throw out here just off the top of my head. because I can't seem to get this to load. We had a really good time in Minneapolis.
We did have a great time in Minneapolis. Facts only.
So just some places that are of interest. But Philly, if I'm thinking sort of off the cuff here, Philly's the one that surprises me, maybe because it is known more of a professional sports town than a college sports town, but yet we get a ton of downloads from there.
Okay. So we, like, there's no, yeah, I want to know, like, what market number 104 is.
Yeah.
Are we big in Broken Bow, Nebraska? Are we big in Overland Park? That's just Kansas City, though.
We're big in Spartanville, South Carolina. There's one.
That would be, oh, see? That's great. Great to know.
Yep.
Pueblo, Colorado.
I will find these. You know that.
El Segundo.
Yeah, that's LA. Okay.
All right. I would go to Flagstaff. There's a pizzeria I really want to try. Flagstaff. Honestly, right. If we could do a show at Pizza Cletta in Flagstaff, I'd be thrilled.
All right. Well, write in, you know, solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know where you want to see us. We already have pretty good data on where our people are at, but we're always up and open-minded for new suggestions. So solidverbal@gmail.com or any of our social channels is where you can hit us up and let us know what's on your mind, where you might want to come and see a live show as we are planning that stuff out for probably later July, early to mid-August, sometime in that time block. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a week. We'll talk more college football, Dan. In the meantime, hope you enjoy the rest of your evening and all of your week.
Thank you. You too, Ty.
I will talk to you soon. I will talk to all y'all pretty soon here as the college football offseason plods forward for that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks again for tuning in. Catch y'all soon. Stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.